Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted and privileged to welcome a very, very accomplished entrepreneur, thought leader, and global speaker, Jaya Vaidyanathan from Chennai, India. Jaya, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Jaya is the CEO of BCT Digital. She's a director of the UTI Asset Management Company. She's a computer engineering graduate. She's an MBA from Cornell, and she's been recognized and felicitated globally. So Jaya, let's first talk about BCT Digital. Tell me about the scope of work you do.
We are a products company that focuses on specifically fintech, mm-hmm. or what you increasingly call as regtech. We have very innovative products, which fills a niche in the market, which we think are not worked out by the global players. Mm-hmm. And it's a fintech player. And that's what we do.
Okay. So for all our young viewers and listeners, let's start with asking you, what is fintech and why is it such a hot sector?
Well, fintech is at the... if you draw a Venn diagram between finance mm-hmm. and financial institutions and technology, that's what you get. Okay. So it is, how is tech used for the financial services play? That's how I would define fintech. Why is it booming? Because both money and technology are in all aspects of our life. Mm-hmm. And the synchronization of both is bound to influence us on a personal level.
Mm-hmm. And yet, I've spoken to many other guests in the fintech space. It is a space that seems to be getting overcrowded. What are your thoughts for the new entrants?
I would call the fintech space as booming, not overcrowded.
Okay.
Because you would call a space crowded only when there's no room to grow. Mm-hmm. I think the pie is extending. And with that, it's just booming. It's not overcrowded. Let me just explain with an example. Even if you take just the payment space, fintech mm-hmm. is a lot more than payments. But if you take just the payment space, it went from physical payments to digital payments by banks, and then to non-banks, and mm-hmm. now to mobile-based payments. And there's a lot more just in that space.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just take the SBI Yono app, if you value that, I believe it could be valued at much more than 100-year-old companies in India.
Wow.
So just let's take that, just the payment segment, and there's so much to be done.
Mm.
So new entrants are more welcome in the market, and we welcome the competition.
Wonderful. And would you say that fintech is now empowering the masses?
Financial inclusion cannot happen without fintech.
Okay.
Because it's all about the last mile connectivity and put the world's services onto your mobile app.
Okay.
That's one way of looking at it as well.
Interesting. And so for someone who's a tech guru and also a business leader and entrepreneur, what are you seeing as some of the latest trends in the digital economy with specific reference to fintech?
The most common technologies propelling us today are predictive analytics.
Mm-hmm.
You would look at it in terms of artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
You would look at it in terms of the mobile connectivity or connectedness as a theme and everything around it to be what propels the worldwide technology. Mm-hmm. We are still to adapt some of the ones in terms of like blockchain into mainstream.
Correct.
Quantum computing is going to just shake us up and take us to a completely different kind of a processing and speeds and things that you've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that is coming. But today, it's artificial intelligence, blockchain and predictive analytics all the way. And obviously, the backbone of that is the connectedness, as we call it.
Interesting. And what about crypto? I mean, that seems to be shaking up the whole world, led by Bitcoin.
And it's an alternative currency, and it's actually paradoxical to say what is the regulation around the cryptocurrency.
Mm.
The whole point is you don't need a regulation around it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's more about what is the applicability and who's using it, and the structure around that, which is a cause of AML and what, you know, who's using crypto, which is the need that people feel around regulation. But I think whenever there's too much rigidity and too much external influence, the younger generation has always found some way to break the barrier. And this is no different. And I do believe this is here to stay.
Okay. And, you know, you have been in this business for a long time. I mean, you're much, much younger than I am. But how have you seen the use of data for analytics? And you just referred to analytics a few minutes ago. How is that changing decision making?
Let me explain with an example. You know, you asked a bank, is this corporate, do you think, diverting funds? The traditional answer, if you look at it, is after the money has left the bank. And it goes into collections. And, you know, after so many years, without referring to cases, you still can't recover. It's about extradition. It's about recovery. It's a whole range of processes. But let's say that you did use new age technology and new sources of data specifically. As soon as a beneficiary is set up, you would go and look at whether it's one of the blacklisted companies. Have the directors been dumping shares? Have there been any adverse news either about the company or the corporate shares? Have they been subjected to sanction lists? Have they been subjected to frequent management audits? So all of that is in your hands today. And that just comes from a lot of public available data and also two specific lists that you go through. And if you add credit bureau data onto it, you can prevent the transaction from happening rather than looking at it post-mortem analysis.
Wow.
That makes a huge difference in looking at big data or unstructured data of all sets.
So over the next, say, 10 years, do you see a reduction in the famous NPAs we have in our country?
If we use the right technology and if we subscribe to it and we are continuing to be motivated by it, absolutely yes. Just to give you an example, some of the technology that we use today for you know, one of the popular banks in India, they used an early warning system and it brought down NPAs by 1% as soon as the bank went live. And I'm talking about a bank with an asset size of 50 billion. So it's an immediate return to economy of $500 million just as soon as it goes live. So the right technology and the usage of it in the right sense takes you to a completely different platform.
Fascinating. You also spoke about AI ML. I'd love to understand from you, because AI ML, you know, blockchains and other forms of technology are being used in every industry. I'd love to understand from you how AI ML is being used in the finance space. And if possible, give me an example.
Absolutely. I love to give examples. Lot of people, like you said, use AI ML as if it's, you know, the next panacea to all evils. And what they do is they think that chatbots are AI, could be in the, you know, the purest sense or the rudimentary way that you look at things, which is, and AI is here to replace what humans do. In the form, yes, it's more about understanding what you do and responding to it at some level. But the response is fundamentally very different. Can I completely understand your humor? Can I understand your sarcasm? Can I understand the way you do? The answer is no, they don't. It's more about parsing a sentence and then taking that and then saying how, you know, a preliminary response to it and then calling a chat agent. So that is not AI. That is more a sentiment analyzer or a statement analyzer. And it's just English paraphrasing and picking up on keywords. So the more it mimics a human, the more it becomes AI, which is more the neural nets of things. Let me explain with an example of something more fundamental that we use in a day-to-day life. I spoke about an example and you asked about NPAs. In the same diversion of funds, how is it done? They look at historical data and it does a lot of pattern matching and say, in the past, when this pattern came up, we could say with 89.3% probability that it did, it was indeed a diversion of funds. it is more about the pattern matching. And let me give a more simpler example. If I gave to you 3,000 decision points, mm-hmm. would you be able to make an answer out of it? I would be confused, and so would you.
Correct.
So it is more about how do you, even something as simple as how do you analyze the data when you have a lot of data and make meaningful sense of it is something that AI can help you do. Mm. And that is something that is being used quite a bit these days.
Okay.
So it's not about replacing humans in this example, but it is to give them a layer that humans can't do and helps in decision support.
Very interesting. The other area that is being talked a lot about are blockchains.
Yes.
And I know a little bit about blockchains, not as much as you do, but what I've been reading about is blockchains are going to resolve a lot of the challenges in the financial space. Because of the way they are able to manage their ledgers.
Yes. A blockchain is a great thing, but it's about how you use that and how you make it accessible to all. And it's more about onboarding parties to the ecosystem of blockchain. That is challenging rather than the technology around blockchain itself.
Okay.
So again, let me explain with an example, because it's kind of like a long sentence. So let's say that Aadhaar was on a blockchain, right? So the bank has put the Aadhaar information, let's say, somebody's put the Aadhaar information on a blockchain. Mm-hmm. It's about how many parties agree that that's a centralized repository and mm-hmm. how many parties use that in a meaningful way. And the onboarding of these parties onto the ecosystem, that's going to be a challenge. Let me explain even outside with a logistic example so that I move away from the fintech industry for a minute.
Sure.
And then say that I'll use a different industry. Let's say immigration uses passport information onto a ledger, and that's all stored on a blockchain.
Correct.
So if all the parties, let's say you're traveling from India to the US, the US needs to be onboarded on immigration, needs to be on the same blockchain as the India immigration. And from the customs to others need to be onboarded onto the platform so that they all have access to the data and they can validate it. But there's no point in like a party putting it on the blockchain when others on the ecosystem don't onboard to it. So that is the challenge in the use of blockchain throughout the world. More than the technology itself, though no technology is without challenges. So that's an evolving age.
Fascinating. So my next question, Jaya, is on India's drive towards a cashless economy. And a major role is being played, by fintech and your applications, whether it's direct benefit transfer or any other forms of moving towards a digitized or a cashless economy. Mm-hmm. My question is, what are still some of the barriers for us to move towards a cashless economy?
I think I haven't seen a 2,000 rupee note in a long time,
yes.
Which obviously tells me that digital economy is here to boom.
Correct.
There is a lot remaining to be done. Like I said earlier on, specifically since you pointed out the payment space, I'll just pick on that for a minute. It went from physical to digital, digital to banks, banks to non-banks, non-banks to mobile payments. And now what remains is a whole lot of things. It needs to be integration across systems. For example, India and Singapore said, let's kind of like merge the payment system so that it becomes more seamless. So we need to have this work across as a network between a lot of countries around the world. That's just one simple example. But it's more about acceptance of digital payments in all forms throughout it. Now you can use the rupee to make international buys. So I think it's more about a lot of that remains to be seen. I can talk about it for an entire period, but I'll stop there. Those are some of the challenges in terms of like cashless, borderless transactions, which will happen eventually, but it's just an evolving phase.
Fascinating. So I'm going to ask you one more question in this space and then move to the next segment. There is a lot of talk about digital currency, and China has launched its own digital currency.
Yeah.
For our viewers, help us understand what is a digital currency and how does it benefit us?
A digital currency is your last mile connectivity towards a cashless economy. Mm-hmm. Simply speaking, you would see that what has been accelerated around the world with the pandemic is that everything has to happen digital. So even those traditional players have now said, you know, digital is a way of life. Mm-hmm. In terms of digital currency, there's a whole lot of things you give. You know, China said, I'm launching my own, so that, you know, the US supremacy in terms of the dollar is no longer there. Mm-hmm. And I'm as powerful as that. And that works within the country. Mm-hmm. And then you have alternate currencies like the cryptocurrency come up, which could be a mainstream. And, you know, the famous Bitcoin plunge and upswing when Elon Musk announced that, you know, we are now going to accept cryptocurrency, it went up. And when he said a statement, we're no longer going to do it, it plunged.
Crashed up.
So I think it's more about the regulation around it, because it's subject to a lot of whims and fancies today. Mm. And the main currency is here to stay, at least for a period of time in our lifetime. But it will become the alternative currency, and people are going to say, why me, why not, why you, why not me, right? And that is something that is going to increasingly happen, and digital currency of main forms, alternative forms, and other countries, you're going to see jump into the fray and say that this is going to be here, and it's going to get increasingly accepted, because that's the new way of life.
Fascinating. So, Jayan, I'm going to move to some questions which I call as questions for you personally, because our viewers and listeners love to get to know the guest a little more. Mm-hmm. Let me start with saying, you know, you're leading such a fascinating company in technology. What would you say is your leadership style?
My leadership style, I would say, is very inclusive. When I say inclusive, I would say it's working from the middle, not top down or kind of like bottoms up. Mm-hmm. And it's a style I would call freedom based on trust. Mm-hmm. We're all there's no hierarchy. We're all working towards a common cause. And it's more the passion that's important than the skills. And I would call that something that's an inclusive means that to me. Okay. So it's more towards all of us are working towards a common cause. And you will ask, that's a completely different paradigm shift because you recruit employees. Mm-hmm. Here you recruit people that have the same purpose. And it's very important, I think, I'll come back to that in your other questions. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a group of people working towards a purpose and a dream. Okay. And creating that style where you have a purpose and it can be articulated in a fashion that people want to go towards that goal rather than something that's, you know, I tell you what to do and you do it, because that's never going to come to anything, even in the mainstream business, but more so in the space that we work in.
Wonderful. My next question to you is on gender diversity. You know, India as a country is making all the right legal changes, is making all the right noises. Companies are beginning to bring women on their boards. And yet my perception or my understanding is it's not fast enough. Mm-hmm. I'd love to get your perspective on what can be done to bring a semblance of balance to start with between the 250% of our country.
I think we have a long way. We have miles to go before we sleep. Mm. And we see a 50-50 kind of an inclusive structure. It's still going to be a long way to go. Mm. And we have what we call a revolving door syndrome in India, which is more that we get a lot of people at the entry level. And as it goes to the top, a lot of them leave that. And that is a combination of things in the way that we shape women also, I think, more than what can be done. It's more about what we call the Devata syndrome, as in be a superwoman, take care of everything and, you know, come to work thinking that you have no home and go to home thinking you've no work, right? So I think that is pushing a lot of people, which is also the revolving door syndrome in terms of pushing them out. But as a corporate and what can we do in terms of legal aspects of it is in principle, when you say women on board, make it more, I served on a French board where they were all women, and they said diversity means at least bring a man on board, right? Okay. So I think that is something that we are seeing in a lot of economies. And here, when it says bring a woman director on board, which is a quota commission, people brought their family members on board. True. And here's a woman. So I think it's not more about doing it in principle or a checklist, but more about what they bring onto the board. Mm. And the whole diversity concept is about different perceptions that you bring on board. So I think it needs a lot from a mindset change at the grassroots level to a lot of regulation around it, and more about what we all think that needs to be done as an active part of our the work we do, whether it's at the board level, whether it's at the corporate level, or whether it's about the systemic level. I think it needs changes in all of these guns working together to bring what we look at as, the utopian dream of having a 50-50.
Very well said. Very well articulated. Thank you. So I have time for two more questions for you. My next question is that for someone who's in the fintech industry, who's seen, the world, who sat in the senior most roles, what are some of the core values you believe in?
I think it's more about the ethics, which is the most important, because when that's lost, everything else is lost. Mm-hmm. So ethical values and believing in your self is really important. I think the core value, I would also say, is passion for whatever you do. If you're not passionate about what you do, don't do it. So I think, honesty, passion, and, inclusiveness. These are something that's a core value. I did explain inclusiveness. It's more about what a set of people bring in and appreciation for the smallest things, from the person that serves you tea to something that somebody that sits across on a board. It's more about seeing them as people rather than seeing them as the roles they do.
Okay.
That's very, very key.
Great response. My next question is, as a follow-up, who or what inspires you to keep on doing such amazing stuff?
I would say my greatest inspiration from childhood has been my mom, who unfortunately passed away in April.
Sorry to
Due to COVID. But it was more about where she came from and how she taught me to push the envelope. Get out of your comfort zone. It's not something most moms say. But unless you don't learn in your comfort zone. So I think it's more about the lifelong learning and the, the minute you stop learning, you stop living is something I've learned from her. And that continues to inspire me to kind of learn new things. So it's more a learning culture rather than a telling culture. Mm-hmm. And the minute I'm very comfortable in what I do, I move on to learn something new.
Okay, wonderful. And my last question to you, and this is for all the hundreds and thousands of people who will listen. What is your advice to a young individual who's starting off on her or his journey in the corporate world or as an entrepreneur?
Life is not without challenges. Mm-hmm. And challenges, the minute you say I have no challenges, it means you're not trying hard enough. Mm-hmm. And especially for an entrepreneur, it is more so. I find that a lot of the millennial generation, it's a controversial statement, but I'm going to make it anyway, is that they want to get into their comfort zones quite a bit. I think that breaking away from your comfort zone to do something more and making that your next comfort zone and then moving on to the next thing that you're not comfortable with is what will propel you to keep growing. So I think that is something that you absolutely must do, because going back to what inspired me, I think would inspire a lot of other people as well, is to more to go break away from your comfort zone, be passionate about whatever you do. And if you're learning 10 new things, learn something new every day. So those would be my mantras. Be passionate about what you do, but don't lose your core values, because that is something that as long as you kind of say the straight path, then the world comes to you because that's the fulcrum. And beyond that, that's really important. And the last thing, focus on yourself too. Because a lot of women tend to kind of do a lot of things, but don't focus on themselves. When I say that, I mean, if health is lost, everything is lost.
That's it.
So have that and focus on yourself, both physical and mental health.
Wonderful. Jaya, thank you so much. It's been such a privilege speaking to you. Thank you for taking me down this incredible journey you have had with FinTech. Thank you for teaching us so many new things about FinTech. Thank you again and good luck.
Pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.